is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builders Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Well, for over a year now, we have done programs talking about the issue of COVID-19. County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer joining us for another one. Dr. Bob, I remember, and it could have been a text, could have been an email, but at some point in, I think, January of last year, you sent me a message about wanting to get on the air to talk about this unusual thing that was going on in China. And I remember being a little baffled as to what possibly could be going on. Little did we know where that would lead.
Indeed, it was the end of January. And I was concerned about seeing this, and at that time predicted that this could be a big deal. So I think I was right.
Yeah, definitely. It's been a big deal. Changed everybody's life for the last 13 months now, last 11 particularly. So let's start out locally in Douglas County. I see the new report is out from the Douglas County COVID-19 response team. Talk about the numbers today.
Well, the numbers today are down a little bit, although this has been our busiest week for COVID in the entire pandemic. Now, most places peaked in November, and we had a peak in November, too. We went down in the beginning of January, but we've seen a real peak over the last week.
So 16 new cases reported today. That brings us up to 2,179. The most popular question I got over the weekend as I was out running errands is, where are we at when it comes to the risk level for Douglas County?
So the risk levels are calculated on a two-week basis, ending this Saturday night. And you have to have less than 200 cases per 100,000. Since we have 112,000 people in the county, we can have up to 224 cases in that time. We're just around 200 now. So if we do really well the rest of this week, we'll stay in the high range. However, if the numbers go up, the state, which calculates these, will put us in the extreme risk range.
And then we would go into the extreme risk range. Would that be another week down the road?
It's typically on the Friday following the announcement, so it would be next Friday.
So that is something for people to keep in mind. It's hard to believe, even as optimistic as folks want to be, that we could get throughout the rest of the week without going into the extreme risk level. And so that's something that's concerning people. Talk about this recent uptick. Where are all these cases coming from? Last week was certainly a bad one.
Last week was a bad one, and they come from four separate places. The first is that we had a big outbreak at a nursing home. This was detected when they were screening and found an asymptomatic person, and since they found some other symptomatic people. And so that's accounted for over 30 of those cases. The second that we've seen is lots of school outbreaks. So we have now 21 current schools that have cases. Now, we don't actually see much spread in class, but what we are seeing is that it's the before school, after school, and other school-related activities that seem to be spreading it. So, for example, when kids were home all by themselves, they tended to stay by themselves. But now that they're back in school, they're having parties and birthday parties. And so we have one now where there was a sleepover with a bunch of kids. One kid was positive and spread it to all the others at the sleepover. So still, those kinds of gatherings, especially in the home, and especially without a mask, are really quite dangerous. The third thing we're seeing is a bunch of workplace outbreaks. And again, the workplace outbreaks tend to spread not actually while you're at your station working, but as people gather before or after work, as people gather for meals, or as people gather for other activities. And then the last thing we're seeing is just a lot of cases associated with adults, not kids, but adults gathering for meals or other social activities. Again, people are most contagious in the day or two before they start to show symptoms. So going out for a meal is especially dangerous. So the NFL published a report with the CDC this week looking at that. And again, the CDC and the NFL shows that outdoor activity, really quite safe. In areas where there's bad ventilation, really unsafe. Meals shared together are really a risky factor. And meetings, especially even short meetings, inside seem to be risky.
Well, we have seen a number of cases from schools. You talked about that. And that probably has people concerned because some schools, Roseburg in particular, just returning to in-person learning, hybrid model for secondary and in-class every day for elementary. And we've just got back to that. Folks are worried that we might end up ramping back out of it again.
Well, that would be a shame because we think the on again, off again at schools is really very disruptive for kids.
Let's talk about the state cases. Now, yesterday we had a drop. We haven't seen the new numbers, or at least I haven't yet, for the state. I had to think, though, when I was writing up that story yesterday, that some of the drop in Sunday's numbers may have been because of the severe weather issues in the Willamette Valley.
Yes. So in the Willamette Valley, they had severe weather, and so probably most people didn't go out to get tested. So that may have been an anomalous situation.
So we'll continue to monitor that. But where are the hot spots in the state of Oregon right now?
Well, the hot spots, unfortunately, right now are in Lake and Harney counties, where they're having relatively small population counties, but they're having some cases. And then Douglas County, which unfortunately is used to be one of the lowest counties in the state and now is about average.
Wow. Nationally, what are the worst places in the country with COVID-19?
Well, it's really interesting when you look around the country. There are places in scattered through the Midwest, in Texas, and especially South Carolina, which is really struggling. And we worry about South Carolina because that's the state where they've identified two of the South African variants.
And what about the world, countries that are particularly struggling with the virus?
So in the world, still the U.S., but Austria and Israel are also really struggling with high levels of disease. Sweden, which we've talked quite a bit about, continues to have moderately high levels of disease, even while its neighbors have really come down.
I want to take up one aspect of dealing with this and looking at the local numbers again, going back to Douglas County. Between isolation and quarantine, 862 people. And on Sunday's numbers, we were in the mid-900s. How do you keep track of all these folks?
Well, we have a great team here that spends their days doing that. So we have about 30 people working here doing case investigations and contact tracing. Actually, last week, as we increased, we also had some help from the state to help us with this contact tracing. The reason we have so many contacts is that the schools, when they have outbreaks, then have lots and lots of contacts. We had two cases that had over 60 contacts each. And so that's a lot of contacts to follow from a single case.
And quarantine is 10 days these days, right?
So quarantine is, for high-risk people, is 2 weeks. For the rest of us, it's 10 days. And there is an option for 7 days with a negative test on the 5th, 6th, or 7th day.
Now, as you talked about the local cases, I remember during the week last week, as this nursing home uptick came out, there was something on the data that was out there that said the folks who got COVID were either patients there, residents of the facility, or workers who opted to not be vaccinated. Talk more about that.
Well, it's people's choice whether or not to be vaccinated. Among the staff members, some declined vaccination, and what we saw was a striking protection from the vaccine. Now, among patients, they also have a right, but there are some patients who are recently admitted and they had not yet had a chance to have vaccine.
So that's something to take a look at as well as people review that. We're going to talk more about the issue of vaccines and a lot of things related to them in our second segment, along with other topics. County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer looking at COVID-19. The interview, a podcast after 1 at 541radio.com. More coming up in a minute on News Radio 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1247, News Radio 1240 KQEN. Lars Larson at 1. Tomorrow, we talk about the Sportsman's and Outdoor Recreation Show, which is virtual this year. Joe Pate will join us. longtime organizer of what is normally held at the Douglas County Fairgrounds, but a virtual offering this year. We'll go over what you can see and how it's all going to work with Joe Page tomorrow as we talk about the Sportsman's and Outdoor Recreation Show. County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer with us this afternoon. In some parts of Oregon and in the U.S., certainly with this big storm, the vaccine rollout is being slowed. Over the weekend, we saw some clinics even in Oregon that didn't take place. Is this going to back up our timeline for when people can get vaccinated?
Yes, we did have a decrease in vaccination over the weekend. I'm just looking at the numbers here, and there's some of our lower numbers. But during terrible weather, people stayed home. So that actually should decrease transmission for a few days and may further slow the rate of disease. But we'll catch back up again. So I have no doubt that we'll get back to the vaccination trend that we were doing before. Remember, the governor said 12,000, except for yesterday, every other day, we've hit that 12,000 number.
And around the nation right now, I mean, a large part of the nation are getting walloped right now. And so that's an issue, not just here, but other places as well. Now, are there any more local vaccination clinics that are scheduled for this week sometime?
So vaccination for seniors, which is really our big goal this week, we're doing through their primary care providers and through pharmacies. And so we've gotten a bunch of pharmacies involved, including Bi-Mart, Fred Meyer, Gordon's Drug, and then the federal program at the Albertsons and Costco. So there's a bunch more vaccine available, and we're encouraging anybody who's over 75 to get that.
And you have mentioned on past programs about kind of the shift for seniors and not doing the sort of mass events when the people getting vaccinated are all seniors.
Right. So mass events for seniors are hard because it's hard for them to sign up. It's hard for them to wait in line. It's hard for them to be around that many people. So doing this in doctor's offices have worked great. I've gotten a number of notes today from people at doctor's offices that they've done hundreds of these vaccines, and the patients have been incredibly grateful.
And are there any more vaccines out there? We've got the two right now. Any more that are close to being approved by the federal officials?
Well, I think the third one that's going to get approved is the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. That's an adenovirus vaccine that has really shown to be really quite effective and very effective in preventing severe disease. So all of these vaccines have been good at preventing disease overall, but they've been very good at preventing severe disease. That's disease that would wind you up in the hospital or the ICU.
Now, is this last one, are there any concerns about certain age groups with it or anything like that?
No, it doesn't seem to be. It's going to be, again, just for adults. It's not going to be approved for kids. It's got less stringent storage requirements so that it can be stored in regular refrigerators rather than this ultra cold. And it's only a single dose, so there's a tremendous advantage to having a single dose vaccine.
Let's talk about the upside and downside of these vaccines, because sort of like cars, they're all a little different.
Yeah, they are all slightly different, but they all work very well. You know, the advantage of the Johnson & Johnson is just a single dose, and it may be available. The advantage of Moderna and the Pfizer are that it is two doses, really hard to store, and slow to make. And because of that, the Moderna and the Pfizer vaccine are not going to be an adequate supply for many, many months.
Now, over the weekend, I was hearing this more often than I think that I'd heard before, that long-term, looking up the road, that folks are likely to need a booster of COVID-19 vaccination every year. Does that sound like what you've heard?
Well, if the virus didn't change, we wouldn't need a booster. But since this virus, like all viruses, change, we may well need a booster sometime in the future, but that's for us to worry about in the future. Right now, we want to get enough people vaccinated so that we get this disease down.
We've talked a lot about the impact on schools and reopening and back to some activity level. Oregon's governor put out new protocols for schools getting some of the outdoor sports back on track. Talk about that and some of the things that are required to pull that off.
Well, for schools to restart sports, they need to be open for instruction. So you can't just do sports and not be open for instruction. And I think that is going to encourage some schools to open. In addition, you need to have a relatively low level of disease and then follow the guidelines for prevention of disease. As I pointed out, in the NFL, they had a fairly successful season this year. And they did that by social distancing, by doing most of their things outside, and by avoiding indoor activities. Unfortunately, what we've seen in this state is there are a lot of outbreaks among sports teams, especially at the college level. And again, it doesn't seem to be what happens necessarily on the field, but, well, let's drive to practice together, let's go out for a meal after the practice is where this does seem to spread.
And when you take a look at Oregon's cases on a given day or maybe a given week or whatever, any idea what the percentage is that it's tied back to college sports?
When we look at outbreaks, for the 1 week that I look, about half of the outbreaks were on college sports teams. Now, there are not that many college sports teams, so to see that many was just stunning. This week it's been a lot less, but again, college sports teams do seem to have outbreaks, and I think almost all of the teams at U of O have had outbreaks along the way.
Indoor sports, and this year, for this school year, the sports season, well, you know, the parts that are going to happen possibly, everything's out of order. I mean, we're talking about playing football in the spring. Who'd ever thought that would happen? People asking about basketball and volleyball, those are indoors. How likely are they to take place?
I don't know. It's so hard for me to predict. But again, indoors seems to be so much more problematic than outdoors. Again, the NFL did this really fascinating thing where people have these proximity badges. And so you could tell who you were near and when and how long. And what they found was that there was almost no spread outdoors, but the spread that they saw was indoors, especially in small meetings.
And basketball and volleyball, just by the way, the facilities that are available at schools aren't really set up to be outdoors. Volleyball might be a little easier, but you know, you've got surfaces that you're playing on to consider and things like that. So a lot of work there for some of the teams that are trying to get things going. What about sports like soccer?
Well, soccer seems to be one of the safer sports. In much of Europe, they've continued with soccer. But again, soccer is outside, played on a large field, 20 people on this very large field. Can't compare that to volleyball, where you have a field which is about 100 times smaller and 12 people on that field frequently being right up against each other face-to-face.
And over the weekend, I don't remember if it was Saturday or Sunday, Umpqua Community College was even able to do their first, let me get it in front of me so I get it right, cross-country team. They had the River Hawk Invitational on Saturday. That was their first team meet over a year, and certainly cross-country would seem much more distanced as well.
Right. So, again, we think cross-country, something like that, will be safe, but it's the before and after. So, if if three people drive together to the practice or drive together to the game, that's the dangerous part, not the running around outside. You know, if people after their game decide, let's go to somewhere and have a meal, that's the dangerous time, not the practice itself.
What about warmer weather? We're not quite there, but we're starting to look towards spring. Does that give you some hope as we get people outside more for just regular activities or maybe other things they can do, that's going to help us out with our county case counts?
Well, again, outdoors is always safer than indoors. And so we would encourage people to do things outdoors. So, for example, if you had a team meeting outdoors is so much safer than a team meeting indoors. And when the weather gets nice and less rainy, it'll be much easier to do it outdoors rather than indoors.
Anything new you're learning about the virus this week?
Well, I think the new thing is about the variants. And the variants, looking at this virus does not tend to mutate a lot, but with so much disease around in the world, it has mutated. And again, if you remember your genetics, there's RNA that comes together, and three of those RNA code for one amino acid, and there have been changed now in at least six different amino acids. And what that does is that makes the spike protein less vulnerable to snipping, and it makes it that it attaches more carefully to the ACE receptor. And so it really does make this virus more hardy than it could be.
All right, a lot of things to learn for all of us. County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer, another in-depth look at COVID-19. Dr. Bob, thanks for being on.
Thank you for having me.
1258 at News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN, a daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications, your home for Douglas County's news team. News Radio 1240 KQEN.